Pop Spotting Preview, San Diego Comic-Con 2010.
Audio from the Fringe Panel.
Hi, I'm Dan Tucker from Entertainment Weekly. I have an announcement. Please remove the three prongs from your upper palates. Assume the body shape you are now in and sit down, please. Turn off your iPods with your download of the Violet Sedan Chair, Seven Sons. I would like to announce the panel. First up, executive producer and showrunner Jeff Pinkner. Executive producer and showrunner J.H. Wyman. You know her as Olivia. I call her Altivia. Either way, she can beat the crap out of me. That's all. Next, we have the man whose mom should have read the book, Peter Has Two Daddies. Joshua Jackson. Likes to eat KFC and LSD, and he plays a alternate who would like to destroy people who eat KFC and LSD, John Noble. Next, he's the man who knows that The Wire would have gotten much bigger ratings if only David Simon let him dress in tighter shirts that showed off his Broyles physique, Lance Reddick. In an alternate universe, she's the star of a show called The Days and Nights of Nina Sharp, Blair Brown. She is the most patient federal agent this side of Dana Scully, a woman who spends a lot of time in Walter's lab making apple pies and enduring jeans cow pies. Just see the note, Nicole, sorry.
That's the tickets. One at a time.
I'm going to start with a kind of general question for producers. What are the major themes coming up this season that you want to do as going forward?
First of all, thank you all so much for coming to Broadway. Big question. I think that at this point we have two universes, and so I think one of our major themes is the road not taken. Obviously, our characters have made choices, or choices were made in their lives that brought them to where they are. And now we have alternate versions of the same characters. And we want to see sort of like how our universe would have evolved had different choices been made along the way.
Yeah, it's a whole concept of that we found was really interesting about the parallel universe is that, you know, people are really interested in possibilities and choices that you've made or that you could have made that would make your life in a very different direction. So the theme of duality, you know, multiplicity, things like that really interest us right now because...
sex.
Yeah, I didn't say that. But I'll go over that. It's the concept of...
should we take a quick
poll?
Yeah, who wants sex? Could that be a teaser?
Well, we can't help but following up on that.
Sure.
I will. I'll ask Mr. Jackson a very blunt question. Is Peter about to embark on the most exhilarating threesome he's ever had?
Is there any such thing as an unexhilarating threesome?
It could have been a foursome if that waitress who had burned you for mix hadn't been killed off. You were on the run. Never mind. They know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, can we just do another poll?
Well, this thinks this is a very creepy beginning.
Okay, we'll get less creepy.
We could also throw Gene in there.
He doesn't
stand for it.
It's not a Jean's
contract. Yeah, that's true.
Anna, I wanted to ask you, as old Olivia, your body language is very different. Your shoulders are back. You have a like, real swagger. You drop the Jeans at the end of your words. I just wondered how you thought through that alternative version of yourself and how you think about physical bearing.
I was so excited when I first found out that I was going to get to do that, and I sat down with the kid that was directing that episode, and I talked to Jeff and Joel about, for the first little bit of it, I was so focused on trying to find the differences, where are they different, and then it didn't work, because I was always looking at the other one, I was playing one. And so then I just let go, and I'm like, no, they're actually the same person, like, they've got the same genetic makeup, they would have the same mannerisms, they, say the same things, they're in the same job, they're fundamentally the same person that have just made different choices, so that's really it. And I don't know, I guess I always, it's so subtle, the differences, but I think, like, our Olivia, I always think she wants to, she really wants to kind of be the best. Like, just wants to be the best. Whereas Olivia just wants to be me. And I think that's the swag to her. And that's the earnestness to Olivia. But yet, you can see that they come from the same club.
Also, your scenes with Finn, the bowling alley, there are a lot of fans I read who think that Finn is in your mind or only appears to you.
I didn't even know that. So that's why I come.
How do you feel, Sam, it relates to Olivia in that context?
I think he's absolutely real. I've never questioned that. I don't know. I think there was a scene when he came to Olivia's house and they were playing the board game. He said, "I'm much older than people think." And so I sort of thought about that. And I think maybe I don't quite know what he thinks, but I think he absolutely serves as a guide, actually a compass for Olivia. But I've always felt that he was very, very real. That's what I kind of loved about it. I remember, the Oracle and the Wing Trips, it's like the same kind of, that magic is such a kind of domestic and kind of physically real situation. I love that he's been following Allie and that she comes to me. I love him.
Mr. Noble, is Walter evil? Do you think of him as evil? Do you have to when you play him, do you have to play him as enigmatic because you're not sure how evil he will be or not?
No, it's interesting. It's not an issue at all in the sense that having to research Walter and go back to what he was like prior to his prior to death of Peter, that gave you the background of Walter. So actually, I know the background for Walton already, and he made, as the showrunner said, he made different choices, was confronted with different choices, and he became a different version of the same one. But it was really quite easy, because I knew, you know, I don't know if you remember that episode, Peter, where we went back, and you saw the death scene, and that was the basis for it. So really, just choices, and that's been an ongoing theme with Fringe since season one. The showrunners have said, what would happen if the choices we've done? So many demonstrations we did that. And that's one of the ongoing themes. And in fact, why we've got two universes, which we're so excited about, you know. What happens if we've done that instead of that? And thank you.
Well, you're not getting off that easily. Bell's final words to Walter are that Walter asked for his memories to be moved, well, because of what you were becoming. What do you think that means?
Well, to start with, I can't necessarily take it as an absolute truth at this point. It's been written, it's been played, and you know, it was a magnificent scene to finish a series on for Leonard Nimoy to finish a career on. I don't know, I just thought we were so privileged to be part of it. What did he mean?
I don't know.
I really don't know, and I'm not tackling the question here. The man you would have become, would you have become Walter? Is this what we mean? Would you have become some sort of a power monger, power corrupts, and that sort of power corrupts, absolutely? Whether that was Bell's perception of it. I mean, Bell is not God. He doesn't get it all right all the time. But it was a pretty powerful thing to say to Walter. You know, and I think, I think Bell was also validating himself in doing it, saying, yeah, well, I only did it for your own good.
Yeah,
we did.
Yeah,
he was not there. I don't trust that Bell.
You asked Ken what the themes were this season, and one of the themes from the beginning of the show, which speaks to that question, was science or knowledge is sort of neutral. But it's the way you use it that can either be for good or for evil. And I think the question to John was, and the difference between Walter and Walton is, if you can cross universes for this very emotional reason of saving your son's life, but at the same time you're playing God, and is that acceptable under any circumstances? And what happens when you realize that you have the power to do these things which maybe man was never intended to have the power?
Mr. Ray, what is the alternative Broyles relationship with Walter?
I mean, outside the obvious that he's my boss.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I've thought about this a lot, and I've talked to Jeff about it a lot. I mean, I really, first I thought that we'd certainly know to do that. But I think it's more just that I have an enormous respect for this man. I believe that he's a great patriot and a great mind. And, you know, at the same time, you know, Broyles is a bit, you know, either universe is a bit of a man. He has a mind of his own. He's pretty smart himself. So, I guess we'll see just how that loyalty plays out as, you know, and that relationship plays out as things go along with him. Excuse me, both of you.
And Broyles has a mole on his team.
He does?
Do you think he'll detect that mole quickly?
Well, if I answered that, you wouldn't have to watch the show.
All right.
I don't know. But I don't think it'll be quickly.
Ms. Brown, I recently rewatched Altered States. J.J. Abrams has, you know, specifically cited as one of the inspirations for Fringe. I forgot how many nude scenes you have in that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very, very enjoyable.
Now I don't do them for somebody else's job.
Do you know anything about the alternate Nina, the other Nina? I've already started calling her Nina Sharper.
Well, you know, I figured we haven't really seen Nina in the altar book, although I kept hoping in the finale someone would step over an arm somewhere, because her arm is there. So I am actually over there, but not the rest. But I figured when she crosses over, if it's the road not taken, that Nina maybe spent a little too much time with Timothy Leary and Walter and William, and that if she's about control in this world, she's about lack of control there. And that perhaps, you know, she moves in all her states of consciousness rather than in the control of consciousness of this world.
Oh, that's really interesting, because I hadn't thought about it. Nina would be much looser than that.
Or she could be a light being. You know, she could be a light being that travels to the end of the consciousness.
Right. I think you have a couple of the key sort of moments that are kind of dangling in the air for this past season. One is your kiss with Royals.
Yes, and our love child asked.
Very good. Asked and answered. Okay. And in the episode of Peter, you have that line. You say, you know how much Peter meant to me, and your voice cracks. That seemed to be very fraught for me as a viewer. Is there a whole other level to your relationship with Peter that we have yet to see?
Well, there is. If you go back to the first season, we had a scene in a stable equestrian center where I say, you know, you and I used to spend a lot of time here. So there is a whole history. But we have 2, 3, 4 more years to deal with that.
Miss Nicole. Astrid's doppelganger is very different from the Astrid we know. How do you envision that new character? And speaking of vision, your eyes look really different. They look really sparkly.
I will never tell my secret. Alternate Astrid secret, rather. I think the character of Astrid is really interesting in the context of these two universes because I don't think she necessarily took a different road. I think that she's so fundamentally different that she took the same road and the outcome is just kind of unbelievable. And Astrid doesn't have the emotional communication in the alternate universe that she does in this one, which is very interesting because she's so close to Walter Bishop and they've developed this incredible relationship together, but this alternate Astrid doesn't quite have the capability to do that. And so she's kind of a loner. You know, they describe her as a looker in the finale. And what she does is she sits in front of screens with floating data, and she's able to make quick decisions based on logic rather than based on how she feels about it, which is really interesting. She's kind of a little bit like a machine in a certain way. And what is interesting personally for me is that my sister is autistic and is not like the alternate Astrid, but definitely when I started to read these scripts, I thought, oh my gosh, there are some really interesting things I can do with this character. I'm not an expert on autism at all, but I have a very personal connection to it. And so I thought, oh wow, there's a whole world of possibilities to make these two people so incredibly different, you know, than more than just what's on the page. So in the first part of the season 3, you get to see more of the alternative Astrid and see how vastly different the two women are.
We also, a lot of us would like to see more of the kind of personal life or inner workings of Astrid on this side of the world. Will we do that?
Well, I got to see where she lives the other day, and that was so cool. I walked in and I said, this is Astrid's apartment? Whoa! And it looks really neat, and it's interesting. It's tiny little things like that that give you a little bit more insight into who she is, because I really don't have a lot of background for her. I just know how she interacts with people individually, and that's been enough for me. But now I know what color her walls are, so watch out. Exactly.
That's very cool. I have a question for the producers. In the earlier, the J.J. Abrams Joss Whedon nerd mind exploding panel yesterday, J.J. said that these days a network show has to find some balance between serialized storytelling and episodic TV storytelling that requires less commitment, and he specifically mentioned Fringe. And it seemed to me that you guys have gone...
Success or a failure?
That was a success. body language is everything. You guys seem to have really gone all in on serialized mythology-based storytelling by the end of the season.
Right.
So I wondered how you're going to address this in the new season. What's the balance going to be between mythology and standalone episodes?
We learned early on that people sort of like the fans really love mythology, but you know there are needs for the network and to sort of make sure that people can come and say, oh, I really want to check out that show, Fringe, and not really feel like it. I'm too far gone. I can't really jump in. So we started experimenting with, a thing called, because, they're called standalone episodes or mythology episodes. And we sort of did some experiments to figure out what degrees of which, and we came up with a term that we call mytholones, which seems to really work. The best example from last season was something like White Tulip. You can see that you're following Walter's, his journey, and we realize, hey, this is the right mix, because you get the mythological elements that people really get paid, that they really want to see. So we're not really abandoning our core fan group, but we're having a standalone case that we find is compelling that thematically will link with that story. Yeah, Peter Weller, he did very well.
That was a great performance by Peter Weller.
But narratively... Narratively we realized that this is the right balance for us. So we're going to have, hard mythology episodes, but we're going to have mythologies as well. And hopefully keep you really entertained in that manner, because we feel that just, you guys, the fans, were not really responding to the standalone concept. So JJ's absolutely right. You need to find a way that people can sort of jump in any episode and say, I want to check this show out, and I'm not going to be lost, and I want to find out why this show, people find it compelling.
Leonard Nimoy has been so great. That he was retiring, did it leave you kind of hamstrung with a problem? Had you wanted to use Bell a lot more going on?
I think we had a story for William Bell that we got to tell. Leonard has now retired twice. He's at Brett Favre. We started the season, we embarked on the story, he retired. We talked him through where we wanted the story to end in season two, and he said, okay, I'll come back. Which was lovely.
It was a good day.
It was a great day. We're incredibly grateful. And I think he was so unbelievably gracious and is such a compelling actor. And from the moment that role was created, it wasn't created with him in mind. It was sort of just the perfect mix of actor. And I think he was initially nervous that we just wanted him for promotional value. But we really wanted to give him sort of a swan song role, which he was really grateful for. So he is now retired again. And should he come out of retirement, should we be able to convince him to come out of retirement again, we have another story to tell. We'll see where we get to.
I'm curious about how he could come back. What is the deal with the color red? The red permeates so much of the alternate universe. Did a Fringe comic book with DC. I'm wondering if there's any chance for a limited edition of Red Arrow or Lantern.
That's awesome. That's great.
We when we were talking about the alternate universe, we were saying that in a world where Fringe events happen much more frequently, the Fringe team would be public, and much like Fireman. Firemen are heroes, and everybody's very happy to see them coming. Unlike the police, who are clearly heroes on their own, there's an element of police state, I think. Whereas firemen, everybody, you know, is grateful to see the firemen, so we sort of riffed on fireman red and thought that the fireman were red.
Joshua, are you jealous that the others get to play dual roles and you have to be obsessed?
No, actually, because it gives me the opportunity in the to be just an audience member of the other side. It allows me to step back from the show that I'm in and just watch it with your guys' eyes, where I can just sit back and enjoy the French. Yeah, because I can judge it harshly. You know what this is missing? You. But seriously, I mean, it's, you know, the, we talk about the back and forth and what's bad. Okay. So without talking about the bad stuff, there are opportunities for me this year to go back to simply being a sci-fi fan with this show, to appreciate it without having to judge my own work in it. Yeah, every actor is, well, this actor is pathological. When you watch, you only see the bad stuff. But when you're not in it, you can actually appreciate it. Your cast and character.
It seems like Peter almost went back to the way he was at the beginning of the series, and feeling that betrayal, he became that sort of doesn't give a damn, you know, hitting the road.
Before the end of the show.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think that's certainly true. I think when he first found out that he'd been, you know, that he allowed himself to open up and be loved and love the people around him, only to find himself betrayed on the most fundamental level. I think, like a lot of us who were put in an impossible situation, we reverted back to form before all this, you know, which at this form was burn all bridges on the way out of town and you're gone. But I think at the end of the season, you know, when he makes that choice to come back and the last thing that he has is with his father, who, you know, makes, sometimes blood isn't thicker than water. He comes back to this man and makes the hardest choice he's had to make in his life, and says to him, you know, I can't quite say the words yet, but you saved my life twice, and that has to count for something. And sometimes when you're forced to make a decision in a snap, you make the most honest decision because there's no rational thought involved in it. It's just a pure emotional response, and his emotional response is to come home. So I think that.
I'm being told we have time for some questions from the audience.
Hi there. I have to say you guys are all fantastic. My question for you guys is, being so fantastic, how do you guys manage to keep it all going when you're out shooting on a sequence? I mean, the intensity, just everything. How do you do it? What are your techniques?
The most important technique is to start every sentence with being so fantastic. I think I'm going to.
So wait, we have a question for you now. You get to ask us questions, we have to ask you questions.
If you get it right.
She's already...
Yeah, so, taking your way down. If you get it right.
So, Anna, do you have a question for our guest?
No, that's
all right, John, you have a question for our guest. And you win a lovely French T-shirt should you get it right.
Yeah, very, very limited. So you got to make it count. No pressure. Yeah, don't worry, you're getting it anyway because I like you.
What color shoelaces? Picture on the cover of the Alternate Universe ZFT book.
That's a really good one. Does anybody know? No, I said. On the back.
Sorry.
On the back.
John, I would like to leave you with something you'd like to say.
That's the answer. On the back.
Thank you for playing. Where's the t-shirt?
Joel's got it.
Okay, we gotta pay
up. It's in the mail, it'll be there.
We deliver.
$5 deposit will send it to you.
Where's Joel?
That's how we keep spontaneous on the set too, doing that sort of
thing. Yeah, Joel. Joel Rest, ladies and gentlemen.
Joel Rest!
A character name in a comic book. Yeah, that woman's name is actually Jill Risk.
Awesome, right? That's
Jill Risk. Fringe.
Yeah.
Division.
Another question?
My question is for John. We've seen what Walternate's actions were for when Peter was kidnapped. I was wondering what you thought our Walter would have done if the tables were turned and it was his Peter that was kidnapped.
Reversal of what you see now. If you go on the other way, then I suspect if Morton had come across to grab him, he would have had to deal with the repercussions of playing God, since Zalman did. So I think we would have seen the swing go the other way. And it's simply a mirror of the two universes, because the same destruction would happen on the other side. So it's a wonderful question, but that it also sort of enhances that idea of chance. It would have been like a mirror.
Homemade ice cream and make Astrid eat. Perfect.
Coster.
Okay, another question.
For the five of you that have two sides of one character, what's it like? As an actor, how's it like playing two sides of the same character at the same time?
I love it, but it's exhausting getting to breathe on and off. Like, that's it's a little bit tiring, but it's been fun. I don't think you get to do that very often for London television.
Do you have a question for this gentleman? An alternative question. Back out again.
Same question, slightly different. Why did Jean have polka dots?
I don't know.
It sounds like this.
Vocal coach and an
ever come to you for advice or...
Would you like to come write this show?
What do you think?
Well, I've read that...
You want a t-shirt. But one more thing. Does anybody know one of the ingredients of Walter's Brown Betty concoction? He crossed two sort of marijuana plants. Does anybody know what one was?
There you go. Who's that?
Well,
I'm
sorry. You get a t-shirt, come on.
And a 5-15-year jail sentence.
We'll wrap it up.